This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to PTBN's NBA Team Podcast. I am your co-host, Andrew Reich, and I'm joined by my fellow co-host, Adam Murray. How you doing?
I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm doing well. How's December? Is it 40 degrees yet?
We're down to 30s and 20s at night.
Oh, okay.
I know you're not used to it. Like, what? It goes below 60?
I saw my first icy windshield 2 days ago.
And you were confused? You're like, what is this?
Well, my car has, like, a problem with the heater, so not a good sign. It's not a good sign when you fire up the car. I don't know if... I'm pretty sure people up in the Northeast where you are used to having to fire up the heater in the car for a good 20 or 30 minutes before they get in it. But, you know, for me, like, it's kind of annoying if you, you know, turn on your car and then you go there 20 minutes and the windows aren't defrosted because your heater's not working. pretty unsightly, type of experience. But yeah, enough about the winter, but even though we're already in it, we're going to be talking about some of the NBA regular season, which is our forte for the most part. Not Joseph Forte. Not even Matt Forte from Dwayne Greenwave.
You could say it's our forte, but yet, you know, last week we did NCAA, we were talking college football, we're all over the place now.
Yeah, diversity is the name of our game. But... I don't even have a good segue for that. But actually, you know what? I do have one. And that's with diversity, and that's with the positions in the NBA. Because doesn't it feel like it's kind of leaning a little more heavily towards the guard play with the scoring being so high and with the fact that everybody wants to run up and down and everyone's trying to get these small forwards that run like the wind? Doesn't it feel like it's kind of transitioning more to a finesse game for you more than it has been in the past?
Oh, we're on a complete point guard renaissance right now.
But when did it start? I mean, we did a few episodes about this, but when did it really start for you with the guards, where things really tilted to where everybody wanted to run? Was the Warriors winning a title a big part of it? Was the Spurs ball movement a big part of it?
Oh, no, I don't think it was really one thing. It was just a collection of college kids and, you know, international players at the same time, mm-hmm. who are all, you know, the talent is what dictates the league, not the other way around. If you just have, if you know, the NCAA is just putting out centers every year and or small forwards, okay, all we're drafting is the same player. If everybody's just, you know, getting point guards high, all right, you know, you're set for 10 years, so you're getting quality players and, you know, they all develop at the same time. Okay, Derrick Rose, followed by John Wall, followed by, you know, Kyle
Lowry.
We're
not even talking about the lower-level guys. Like, I hate to even see lower-level, but, like, more of the middle tier, like a Mike Conley and a Kyle Lowry. And, I mean, and then you mentioned John Wall. You know, there's guys that are probably on that middle tier that are already creeping up to an elite status.
The thing is, just you're on a lower tier. Like, you know, we did our rankings last year. It's just like, you know, Teague, he's not that good, but, well, he's still really, you know, better than a lot of people. And you just get all these people in at the same time, and every year, you know, top three pick, they're all developing, and that's just the way the NBA went, and now that's why we're having crazy guard play.
So you think it's a combination of circumstance and coincidence because of the fact that you have all the talent that's coming into the NBA, whether it be from high school or college or internationally, and also the fact that because the game is being played faster, that's the way that a lot of people want to play now, they put more responsibility in the hands of the point guard to be the scorer, the distributor, and sometimes be the defensive linchpin so that they could try to turn into transition buckets?
Well, yes and no, because, Like, let's look at the NFL for a second. All of a sudden, the Wildcat comes in. We need faster, smaller players. That's fine. Then we'll go. Then let's go all spread, and then everybody goes spread. Then, oh well, we could beat the spread by having, you know, a strong running game again that disappeared. It's, everything is just cyclical. Everything can be fast until you get a dominant big man comes in. Okay, now we need to go big because, you know, the next Shaq is here and he's just destroying everybody, and we can have all the guard play we want, but he's scoring 40 points a game.
Yeah, and that's what we really were, you and I were discussing, and we decided to just bring it over here to the show for an open discussion. That was about the slow transition of the NBA big man, and I mean it's something that's been going on for quite a while. You know, we had a lot of them. I mean, the thing is, in the early 2000s with Shaq was the best player in the NBA. He was the best player, and he was the most dominant player. You know, a lot of these are reminiscences that you're seeing with Kobe Bryant, who announced that this season will be his final season. There's so many things that memories that we see of him when he was younger, teaming up with Shaq. What it reminds me, Adam, and I don't know if it does the same for you, is that it just reminds me, man, even though he's a bit of a blowhard and he's a self-promoter, Shaquille O'Neal in the early 2000s was about as good as it gets.
He was unstoppable in every which way, other than free throws, of course, but
yeah.
There was nobody who could take him one for one, and now, you know, the definition has sort of changed because you're not getting another person like him, and all the knockoffs of Shaq. Well,
that's the thing. That's what I was about to say. Everybody was trying to find a knockoff. Everyone was trying to find a Michael Olowokandi or a Todd McCullough. And then you had the power forwards that would try to brush up against them, like Tim Duncan and Rasheed Wallace and Kevin Garnett. Like, there were guys that were in that realm where they could try to compete with Shaq, and it turned into kind of like the battle of the land of the Giants for a little while in the NBA in the early 2000s. Where did it kind of dissipate? Was it really with Shaq kind of deteriorating in terms of a talent, or was it something else?
It was just, there was no skilled, fast big men really coming in anymore. It just used to be, all right, let's draft a 7'5" huge guy, you know, like a Pavel Podkolzin. We don't know, he's from Russia, but he could give 6 fouls, and, you know, he has size, you can't teach height. And then it was like, well, we'd rather have somebody who's a little smaller and a little more, you know, fleet on his foot so we can play, you know,
so
we can now have
the offense through him without him being a deterrent.
Yes, and we can have stretch fours and stretch fives now as opposed to just them being, you know, extreme specialists, like a Walter McCarty. Just, okay, well, you can't do anything else, but you can shoot threes.
Now, there's always those freakazoids. You know, there's guys like Dwight Howard still. I mean, Dwight Howard's still averaging 12 rebounds a game, and the Rockets are creeping back up a tad under J.B. Bickerstaff. And Howard, you know, he doesn't play back-to-backs, or, you know, if there is a second game on a back-to-back, he doesn't play it. But he still is an elite rebounder. Andre Drummond is a freak. He's almost sealed up the rebounding title at 17 rebounds a game. And then Rudy Gobert with the shot blocking and the long, uber long arms that he has. So you always got those really freakish centers. I didn't even mention DeAndre Jordan. But what really brought along the subject for us was we were talking about the introduction of 3 new big men into the equation out of the rookie ladder, and that's Karl-Anthony Towns in Minnesota, Jahlil Okafor with Philadelphia. We'll get to him. We'll kind of talk at length about him a little bit later. And then Kristaps Porzingis. Would you call Porzingis a true big in the NBA?
No, and that's the thing is, based upon the old definition of, well, why there are no more bigs anymore, none of those guys are true bigs. Those would all be fours in the old system. And, you know, the five.
Yeah, I would agree, but I think Towns could have played center in the early 2000s.
Yeah, he could have, but he would have been a small one because the five was always the big, you know, he's 7 foot and like 280. And
he's a bit of a wide body, I agree. You know?
You know, it's just like who, you know, of the people that are left, you know, you have like Cousins, he's a true center. You said Howard, and Gobert wouldn't be a true center back then. You just need to be like a huge, huge body, like a Nikola Pekovic. Just, you know, you.
A good example was watching the Spurs. Like, if you look at all the championships that they won in '99, he was the power forward, and Duncan was David Robinson, his mentor, was the center. Then in 03, it was Duncan and Robinson again, but they also had Kevin Willis. They also had
Rosho Nesterovich.
Nesterovich, I believe, was on that team. 05, they had Elson and Nazi Muhammad and Oberto. 07, I believe they had Oberto and Muhammad there too. And then you go all the way to 2014 when they won their next title, and Duncan is the power forward per se, but he plays center. You know, he switches off with Thiago Splitter when Splitter's wasn't on the court. And you could just tell by watching the Spurs how it's evolved, because they're so good at adapting to the environment that they're provided in the NBA landscape. And you could see how Duncan kind of went from being like a smaller big to like a legit big.
Yeah, and that's like, we mentioned, because there's no need for him to be, there's nobody bigger for him to cover, so all right, well, then you could just now be the big guy.
Here's the other question you say. You call him the big guy. Now, when that was said during the Shaq days, that was like a lot of responsibility. You had to handle not getting in foul trouble when you guarded a guy like Shaq. Ben Wallace, was kind of like nefarious for being a defensively minded center that was only good at maybe putbacks and maybe drawing fouls on post ups and such. But being the big guy meant that you were like, you had a lot of responsibility. You had to do a lot of things for the team. What does being the big guy mean now in the NBA?
The big guy now is just sort of mop-up duty. You're just, I'm not going to say it's become marginalized, but when you were then, also don't forget with the rule changes and just can't, you were just sitting in the basket.
The defensive 3-second violation too, yeah.
Yeah, so you could just sit there and just, all right, I'm 7 foot, I'm just going to raise my hands up and just try to get over me. Mm-hmm. And, back then everything went through the center because everything was all half court. Now with more transition offense, your job now is to start the fast, get the outlet pass to get everything up and running to, you're not, if it goes down three, which is sort of like why we're seeing trouble in Milwaukee, is because you have this traditional, low
back
post
the
center.
Score, yeah.
But the rest of the team isn't. They're transition. And once they slow down, none of them really know what to do because, like we mentioned, none of them really have sort of positions. And if you're going to say, okay, Giannis, you're a four now, but I'm still going to run around the perimeter. Well, then, okay, now you're just Atlanta, and all you have is just people running around the three-point line.
I'll tell you a team that's interesting if you want to kind of observe the changes that have been going on with the NBA is Cleveland, because when you look at them, you got Timofey Mozgov. Mozgov is kind of like, it kind of feels like a throwback center, if you would agree, where he's rebounding, putback dunks, shot blocking. Tristan Thompson's kind of like an in-between. He's sort of like he's a little finessey, but he's a great offensive rebounder. He's got a low, center of gravity. Pretty agile, even though he's not a great scorer. Kind of reminds me of a lot of those centers back then. And then there's Kevin Love, and Kevin Love is kind of like the new center. Would you agree with that, with the passing and the shooting and the ability to roam and still collect about 11 to 12 rebounds a game?
Well, he is the new center. Mm-hmm. Somebody who, very good passer, very, like Vlade was back in the day. You just have that all-court vision. And then, just going back to, Thompson is sort of like Chandler. Yeah, Chandler was the four and Curry was the five, because Curry was the bigger body.
Yeah. Oh, we're going back to the Baby Bulls, huh? It always comes back to the Baby Bulls.
Well, it pretty much does, because they're the ones that really tried this new, let's blow everything up, tank, and let's get young people. And
which is exactly what the Sixers are doing, except that we haven't really seen that.
Well, that's what a lot of teams are doing. They're all doing it in their different way.
Mm-hmm.
And
which way do you like the most out of the current crop that's been kind of collecting their big man? Do you like the way that they're doing it in Minnesota with Towns? Do you like the way? I mean, I know there's nothing to like in Philadelphia right now, who did get their first win against the lowly Lakers while Kobe Bryant's on his retirement tour. But you got Okafor and Noel, and I mean, it's working. It works decently, but it's not like a rousing
it's
success.
It's not really working, because the more I watch those two, the more I don't think they can play together.
Mm-hmm.
They just don't seem, they're not a good complement to each other. And, you know, which team is really doing it better? I don't know, because every year they're still in the lottery, and you keep, okay, is this Utah's year? Is this Orlando's year? And the problem with young talent is you still need veteran leadership in there. You need to spruce in some veterans, which a lot of these teams aren't doing.
Yeah, I mean, we'll talk about that in another time, about the veteranship in the NBA and how we're on the brink of a mass exodus. And I don't mean that in terms of, like, that the NBA is going to be losing a lot of talent in the future. I think it's because it's just simply the numbers. It's because of age, you know. And, I mean, I think we are in a golden age of talent. In terms of talent in the NBA, but I do think we're at a point where we're going to hit that cliff.
Sort of at that cliff, because, like, you know, we're just going to, this is a preview for a future episode, but the numbers game is, well, you could get this draft picker, you know, D-League kid for $100,000, but this 10-year veteran, you know, he doesn't want to take a veteran minimum anymore. He'll want, you know, $3-4 million, and, well, we don't want to pay him that, and what good does he do? And unless you're, like, a really good locker room character or a teacher, then, well, you're just a 32-year guy. We have to rest every fourth game. So that's sort of the problem, is these people are all doubling down on youth and just keep doubling down.
With Towns and Okafor, and let's also throw in Porzingis for good measure, you mentioned that they don't have the traditional size of what an NBA center was considered back in the 90s and then the early 00s, which might be true, but which one do you think has probably the best upside as a center going forward that you've seen in the past month or so of the regular season?
It would be Towns. I don't think Towns has that natural, you know, that killer mentality to be that, you know, that superstar that, you know.
Yeah, but is he like the new center, or is he kind of like the return of the old center? Because he ain't going anywhere. He's a true great all-around center already in the NBA, I would safely say.
He's a great all-around. You know, he reminds me of, like, younger Marcus Aldridge.
Okay.
Marcus Aldridge. And, you know, where he had that 20-foot jumper and, like, a bigger Garnett almost. Because don't forget, Garnett came in as a 3, and then at the end of his career, he's a 5. Mm-hmm. He didn't put on any weight. Yeah, he's still a stick, and all of a sudden, okay, well, now because you're 7 foot, you're by default, you're our center. So I think as the way goes, because eventually we're going to get away from three-point shooting, because all we're going to have is 4 guards, and all you need to do is sort of put a bigger lineup on them, and they'll just destroy them and get the smaller guards into foul trouble. And
If the centers aren't smart enough to be able to adapt and run. Now, from what I've seen with Okafor and Towns and Porzingis, these guys can run, which is sort of a new change. You know, the lumbering, that's the one thing I think has kind of went away. The lumbering big man is now gone. Even the guys like Jordan and Gobert and Andre Drummond, those guys can go. Like, even Serge Ibaka is pretty good at running. We don't really have a lot of these centers like a Vlade Divac, you know, like a, I'm trying to think of another example, like a Ben Wallace, just kind of like hobble and kind of like backpedal to their position, you know, in a slower on slower possessions. Now it's to a point where you have got to be quick. You've got to be able to set your feet. You've got to be able to move out of the paint so that you don't get a defensive 3-second violation. It's gotten to a point where the center is now a part of the offense a little bit more than I remember it. And also, the fact is, the center position, like you said, has changed as a whole. Like, we have a point, we're at a point now where Draymond Green is considered a center. Tim Duncan is considered basically a true center. You know, things have changed drastically in the NBA in that position. But do you think that can tilt back to where it was?
If you get enough centers in, but we've been getting a lot of these 6'11", 240, 250 guys in.
Yeah.
If all of a sudden the next 4 drafts you're getting these 270 pounder, you know, like Alex Len types, you get 4 Alex Lens in a row, okay, well then we're going to develop our offense around him, and then more teams will start doing, okay, we need to now counter that, and then, well, how do you, if you're a smaller team that relies on speed, what's the quickest way to stop them? You slow it down.
Yeah, so like Memphis does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why Memphis, you know, who true center in in Marc Gasol, and really essentially a true center in Randolph now.
Yeah, Gasol might be one of those centers that kind of like slowly goes backwards, but that's because the style that Memphis plays sort of dictates it so that they don't run his legs out. It's also with Zach Randolph, who just, I believe, came back from a knee injury just recently, am I right?
I think so. He was.
I mean, he's slowing down a little bit too. He's in his. He's getting it up there in his 30s. So
he has a lot of mileage on those legs.
Yeah, and the numbers are still showing that he's decent. Memphis has bounced back pretty nicely back in the Western Conference playoff like spectrum for right now. But yeah, they're kind of like they kind of play. They're almost like a team that plays that blueprint, but they don't necessarily have the true like bookmarks to play that system. You know, and yeah. They have a lot of other teams like that. Like, I think Gobert and Favors is a great example of like the true like old school formula with a four and a five, where you have a power forward who can rebound and score, and then you have a center who can block shots and rebound, and that's about it. You know.
Well, the problem now is just. Everything is just becoming three ball, and it's just, okay, Cousins, you want to go shoot threes? Go right ahead. Anthony Davis, you want to take a three? We don't care. But, you know, whereas back in the day, if the center had to shoot a three, okay, somebody panic passed to you with a second to go?
Yeah, DeMarcus Cousins is taking threes now.
Yeah, and they're starting to hit them, and it's just, you know, somebody like Channing Frye, who was just the, all right, you're the extreme fringe commodity. Of we really need a
even
you
that
know.
Even that guy Bielica out in Minnesota, kind of like one of those stretch guys.
Yeah, they're all stretch guys now. Mm-hmm. There's really no the way the NBA is gone. It's like the paint is just like the well. There's no need to go in there.
Is there going to be a point where we have a center, whether it be Towns, Okafor, even let's like I said, let's throw in Porzingis because of his size and because of his rebounding ability. Do you think we'll get to a point with a center where he's so good that the team will abandon three-point shooting? Not abandon it, but kind of like downplay three-point shooting and be able to become an elite team and possibly be a title contender with a true center as their best player? Or do you think we're just at a point in the NBA with pace of play and the three-point shooting is just to a point where you cannot, it's impossible to do that, so they're trying to diversify these centers' skills and try to commodify them into all these other different things like quick play and three-point shooting. Like, which way is best? Is it best to try to make them do more things so that they become more multi-skill type of players, or is it better to sort of keep them in a box, cradle them a little bit in the paint, and then try to expand upon that? Play from the inside out is a better way.
Well, the thing with versatility is you're now sort of safeguarding yourself from injuries. Because, okay, if everybody's all versatile, somebody goes down, we can just plug in the next guy.
Yeah, but that's not good for the player himself. And that's become a big problem for a lot of these players. They're starting to wear down.
Well, that's the play, but the way that the team, you know, nobody cares, and then nobody really cares because, you know, they're allowing, you know, DNP rest now. And
yeah.
Back then it was like, what? And people sort of know, okay, you know, we're going to take days off. And nobody, the guy who comes in, is really not that half bad anymore, as opposed to the bench guys used to be just all garbage.
Off subject, do you think the days of the NBA Iron Man is over, like the AC Greens of the world and... I mean, the closest one I could have thought of was Damari Carroll, but, I mean, are those kind of guys kind of going away?
The Rip Hamilton of, I'm just going to continue to
the
run.
The day in, day out, you know, blue chipper type of players. The ones that never sit games, I'm thinking of the players that had consecutive regular season games.
That's sort of done because they... You know, they're being told to sit. They're being told to rest. They're being told to...
Yeah, it's like baseball pitching in a ways.
You know, it's like Cal Ripken. Like, if you ever watch any of Cal Ripken's games, there was a lot of times where he really shouldn't be playing or really wasn't good, but it's like, well, his streak's going. Now it's just like, well, we need, you know, you're a commodity. We need to have you to take a day off to save it for the end of the season because, you know, come playoff time, like we see every year, the game slows down and then all your three-point shooting really becomes...
Your strength.
It doesn't become your strength. It just sort of becomes your only thing, and if you rely on it too much, you know, you could having 3-point shooting with a half court set, and you're just all you're doing is just sort of killing yourself if you're not hitting them. Because you're just, it's the equivalent of being the NFL team, okay, we're down by 2 touchdowns, well, let's run the ball.
Well, that's the funny part, they say threes cost more, it's funny that, like, well, why are they shooting threes? Well, they realize that threes are more, you know, mean more points than twos, you know, you rather have 3 points than two. It's like, yeah, what a great revelation that 3 points are more than 2 points, like, we never knew that for the last 30 years. That's true. 3 points are better than 2 points. But guess how much a miss is from the 3-point line? It's just as effective as a miss from the 2-point line. It's just as effective as a miss from the free throw line. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's to a point where it's like, yeah, but if your 3-point shooting percentage is really low, and you take a lot of them, maybe it balances out. But if you don't take a lot of, or if you're on the average, which is like about 18, I think it's about 18 a game now, maybe over 20.
Oh, it has to be way over 20 now.
Yeah, to the point, because of how many are being shot, especially with the Warriors and the streak that they're on. We'll get to them in a minute. And if you're at the average and you're like less than maybe 45% from the 3-point line, then you might be in a situation where you're going to have to rely on other things in order to score, and that's where we're going to have to feed this back to the bigger guys so that you could try to invert the offense, kind of go do some reverse action.
And that's sort of the thing is, well, okay, if you have Tyson Chandler, that's great. You have this rebounding guy, Tristan Thompson, but then, well, the game slows down. Well, you don't know how to score points now. So
What I'm worried about with Towns and Okafor is that they're being introduced into the NBA in a system in which the big man is just not a focus. It's not a point of emphasis. I just don't want them to hurt their skills by being told, well, we need 3-point shooting and we need a guy that can run, so do these things so it fits our system, even though it doesn't fit the system of the player. That's what I worry about.
Well, what it sort of is...
bad habits, if you will.
Yeah, it's sort of, well, we need you to be the savior of the team, but you're not going to be the focus of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could still, you know, you could score your 30 points a game, but we need to get, you know, you need to create open three attempts for other people.
Yeah, well, unfortunately for Jahlil Okafor, he's the so-called savior of the team, which is kind of like a safe word because he is probably their best player in terms of scoring and rebounding. But he's also been the focus, too, for a lot of reasons, right?
Pretty well, yeah. He's been asked to do a lot, and again, we forget he's 19, so he doesn't know anything.
This stems from a handful of incidents that had already occurred in the after hours, if you will, with Jahlil Okafor for the Philadelphia 76ers, having a very good rookie year. Unfortunately, a video on TMZ had surfaced from an incident that had already been cited by one of the newspapers. I'm not sure which one did it, but it was an incident that happened in Boston. Was it directly after a Celtics game, or
it was in the nighttime,
and he gets into a pretty bad scrum out there on the outside with a fan who was heckling him. Punches are thrown. He looked pretty lively. I don't know what the fan had said to him, but you know, Jahlil Okafor in interviews seems like a pretty cool, collected guy. Even though he's very young, like you said, but he just blew up on this video. He is cursing, hollering from the top of his lungs, comes in throwing punches. Very, very ugly scene. You know, the NBA, after all the stuff that happened, and you know, with Ron Artest, and then you know the incident that happened with where the Indiana Pacers were all getting arrested in 2006 and 2007. You know, they're very, very image centric. So, you know, it was investigated eventually after the TMZ video broke out. Okafor was handed a 2-game suspension, which will be finished by the time this podcast hits air. And so, the only thing I worry about this is, like, what's the lesson learned for a 19-year-old kid at this point? Can you even teach him anything?
Well, basically, the lesson is, the world really sucks. You know, you're coddled as a high school kid with your AAUs and, you know, reports of private jets and 5-star hotels. Mm-hmm. You're the darling at Duke. Everyone loves you. You can take classes if you want, really. And, not at Duke, but just at some places.
Yeah.
And you're winning championships. You've never lost. All of a sudden now, you haven't won a game, and you're 19, and, well, my whole life I've been winning, and now everything sucks, and everyone's, you know, people are telling me, you know, well, you suck now. You're not used to that.
Yeah, but let me say this. Tabo Cephalosha was playing on one of the best regular season teams in the NBA last season. Didn't help him much when he went to a nightclub and Chris Copeland got shot, you know, and then he gets, you know, and then there was a mishandling with the New York police officer, you know. But at the end of the day, you're still in the bar or a nightclub, whatever you want to call it. You're still getting into some kind of a trouble in which a gun is involved. There's also an incident that they had reported that where Okafor had a gun pointed at him, you know, in one of these nightclubs. And the other part of it is, he's 19 years old, he shouldn't be in a nightclub. Oh, well, please. How many 19-year-olds are in every nightclub, especially famous ones?
Yeah, exactly. And that's the thing is, you know, well, I used to be the king of the town, and now I'm just another person. And, well, yeah, of course, if you're in the, you know, you notice a lot of these older veterans, they just go home and sit and do nothing or watch tape.
You're making them out like they just go back and watch Matlock and listen to B.B. King albums or something when they go home.
You know, how many times do you hear, like, in the old veteran, like a Chauncey Billups going out partying at night, and you don't hear about those stories.
Is this something where rookies are the most vulnerable because they're in that limelight, or do you think that the NCAA one and done flair is so magnanimous for them because in the college nightlife that what I'm trying to say is that is the college nightlife still far in contrast to what the NBA day in day out nightclub nightlife is? I mean, I'm not a nightclub goer, if you will, and I'm not ever going to be a really famous 6'9" young kid who goes to the NBA. But is there a big difference between the college frat house goings on and then going to the big boy nightclubs and trying to stay out of trouble there? Is there a big difference there?
Well, the difference is it's just your night. You know, think back to when you were 19. You know, you were a very stupid person.
Oh, speak for yourself.
I'm sorry, you were a Rhodes Scholar back then, and you just
I was very stupid.
You know, we've all done stupid. It's like, you know, like, wow, I can't believe I got out of, like, you know, I'm not dead or in jail or did something stupid or, you know. And it's just, that's, you're young, you want to live, you want to party, you want to have friends, and you want to do all this stuff. Now it's just like, you know, if it wasn't for your kid stuff, you're just like, eh.
Go to the professional level and you go to these kind of, you go to adult bars anyway in college, but you're sort of coddled by the college system. You're coddled by the school and
it's basically, okay, you go to the frat house, you have your parties, you know, you're with your friends. You go to any, you know, any hole in the wall bar. Party, everyone be like just staring at you, like, who the fuck is this asshole? It's a professional business in the NBA, whereas when you're just a kid in college, you're a kid.
The other thing too is that, what do you think, I mean, I don't think you and I are exactly experts on this, but what is the kind of thing or subject or topic that really gets into a situation in which a gun is involved, fisticuffs are involved, knives are involved? Is it simply just girls? Is it owed money? Is it maybe just somebody talking shit about you and walking away? Someone hitting you in the back of the head? Like, what causes these kinds of things?
Well, a lot of it is when you're going to a club, you don't know who's there. Other people, you know, have their other, you know, tough guys, and look at that, that's so-and-so, oh, I'm going to show him up, with the exception of Plaxico Burress or the Indiana Pacers of the last decade, you didn't have people just going out with guns and doing things. It's other people bringing the drama to them, which, yes, you're there, so now you brought it upon yourself because you're such a high-profile figure.
Yeah, and it's that chicken-of-the-egg scenario where celebrities feel like they need to be either armed or heavily secured because they feel like they're more heavily exposed to being to being hurt or being approached by a sinister force when they're on when they're out in the public.
And
but,
also,
but is it even worse by you having a gun? You know.
But it's not just you; it's you, and you're with your crew, and who knows who your buddies?
Yeah, and
have
they might be loaded. And, they might be the ones that are armed, so that they take the fall in case there's a.
Well, that's what usually happens. For every puffy, there's a shine. to take the fall for you, and who knows who your buddy has beef with, and who knows what everything, again, you put yourself in the situation, well, I'm the king, you know, in middle school, everyone used to protect me because I was the golden boy of the town, and nobody wanted me to get hurt, yeah. So all the gang violence, everyone sort of protected me because they didn't want me caught up in it.
Who would have thought nightlife politics would be so complicated?
You know, yeah, and just in the real world, nobody gives a shit about you. You're just one person in the big sea of things.
Bringing it back to Okafor, is the main concern that this was on video, sort of like a reactionary thing like Ray Rice, or do you think it's the fact that this has been reported twice already and there was a gun involved before, which kind of brings back the echoes of the Tabla Cephalosha incident and the Gilbert Arenas Javaris Crittenden incident?
Well, it's not that. It's just more of the Johnny Manziel of, well, why didn't you tell us? We tried to sweep this under the rug. And then the more you try to sweep things under the rug, the more problem it becomes.
Mm-hmm.
If it was just like, well, this is what happened. You know, nowadays, everything is on video, and everyone has cell phone cameras, and everything's going to be taped. Mm-hmm. So you can't cover things up. And it was just like, okay, well, this one incident will cover up. Then, oh, there's another incident. And this is just, well, we're the 76ers, there's no veteran to sit next to you to be like, look, kid, this is what you do at night. This is what you do every day. This is how you act professional.
So is suspending him the right way to go so that he basically sits around with his boys and they say, don't worry, we'll just chalk this up as a loss?
No, it's sort of just like you sit and think about what you did. You want to be, you want to be the face of the franchise. You want to be this. You know, by all accounts, you're a good kid.
Yeah.
Maybe this will send you the message.
He had no signs that I knew of, either from reports in college or in high school in Chicago, being a troublemaker. That's why this kind of came up as a surprise that he had multiple incidents like this.
But it's just, again, it's youth, and they don't, in college, basically, college is the sort of protected system where you can sort of fail and everything will sort of be covered up. Because the underage drinking or anything that really goes on,
and the police and most police departments in those college towns I don't want to question their authority, but they're a little hesitant to take in somebody into the clink if they know that they're a student athlete or a primary player that may not have done something that they're being accused of doing because of their celebrity.
That's also after the campus police got through them. So the campus police went to the regular police and here's the information we're giving you.
Yeah. Now, I don't want to compare this with because when I say that, people think about Florida State and Jameis Winston. That is completely different. Completely different. This happens in, like, every campus ground with campus cops where an incident occurs and then they kind of report it on their own merits and then they decide whether they want to go through with it or not. They're supposed to go by the letter of the law, but let's be serious. Like,
well, the difference is... Let's compare that to the LSU bar fight with Jordan Jefferson and those crew.
Yes.
Because that was off campus. The real police were there first on scene. Mm-hmm. As opposed to, okay, this was a campus event and we don't know what happened. We're not going to ask too many questions.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing too. I think campus police were the first ones involved in the Winston case, if I stand correct.
Yeah, I think you're correct with that. But once the real police are the first ones on scene, and the campus were like, okay, look, everybody, break it up, everybody, okay, it's another frat house.
And it's like they always say, the only way to slow down a case is by piling paperwork on top of it. And that, you know how you do that? You have one department bring it to another department, and it takes even longer to get done.
Yeah.
I don't think anyone was arrested in these incidents involving Okafor, even though it's very clear there's a fist fight going on in the middle of the street.
It was just a fist. It was just that happens. And, Yeah, there are reports like, oh, that guy's going to sue him now. And it's just like, well, the issue is it should be done and over with. And
if I'm an average-sized man, why would I get in a fight with a guy like who's 6'11", who's got hands the size of this printer in front of me? Why would I do that?
It's just, well, again, hecklers, you know, haters are going to hate or heckle. And as a kid, you know, oh, he's taking it on me. As opposed to, well, he's just talking shit because I'm on the other team. If I was, you know, if you don't, I doubt you'd see that in Philly. Well, Philly fans are sort of,
yeah, but this is in Boston, remember?
Well, yeah, but I'm saying if Boston were 0-19 and he would play for Boston, and you wouldn't see somebody, oh, you suck, fuck you to Marcus Smart or something.
Yeah.
They'd be like, okay, man, you'll get him next time.
Marcus Smart's had a few incidents like that, but that's not necessarily in the nightclub. He actually went ahead and just did it right there on the court.
Yeah, he did it on the court. Well, what happened then? Well, nothing, really. He got suspended and, you know, you can't play basketball. You're leaving anyways.
That one was fair. I mean, I don't want to go into a subject that's not involving that topic, but the Smart suspension I had no problem with. With Okafor, my only problem was, what is this? I know sitting him down and not having veterans on the Philadelphia team is fine, so maybe it was a circumstantial suspension. But what really good does it serve if he's at that age? I think it's just something that you just have to chalk up, and he just learns from it. And you don't want a DeMarcus Cousins situation where you develop bad habits. And I don't necessarily mean bad habits as a player, like we were talking about with all these big men being ushered in and maybe trying to learn things that they're not supposed to, that they don't really have to do. I'm talking about bad habits in life, you know. And I don't think that's something that you can really teach by suspending somebody.
We should. There's a difference between, you know, the bad habits. And this is, okay, well, now we're going to take two paychecks from you. You're a good kid. We need to sit down with you. This timeout might be good because you lied to us. He didn't get suspended for the fight. He didn't get punished by the league. He got punished by the team for lying to them and trying to hide things, which as a kid, you know, you would do, be like, look, man, you're a professional. You need to help us so we can help you.
Yeah, it was a bad moment. You just don't want it to turn into bad character. You know, that's the word that you always hear in the NFL draft now with all these people, with all these college football players that get in trouble. Character. What's their character like? You know, and I don't really know how important character is anyway, because most of the time I watch NFL football and most of the good players are always in legal trouble. But hopefully for Jahlil Okafor, he can bounce back from the suspension. You know, you don't want to say that. You don't want to make it out like, oh, I don't want to hear any more bad from you, boy. But, you know, it's like,
well, that's sort of it. It's sort of the, okay, we're going to go meet with, you know, the president of the team is going to come down. The owners are going to come down. We're going to have this, you know, we're going to say, like, look, you're young. This is just a mistake. You can't lie. You know, you need to be honest. If we want to invest in you, you need to trust us. And it's just sort of, well, if you had a veteran system in place and you had a professional team, this might not have happened.
Yeah.
But since they don't, you know, it's just that you're a good kid. Look, don't fuck up.
And you can't interlink that with one and done. We've seen so many guys that came out of high school, came out of college after 1 year, and they came in the NBA, and they were complete professionals from day one. So you can't really go by that. Even though in some cases, some people's personalities are a little bit more open to the vices of the NBA life, and that's just the way it is. We spoke about the NBA three-point shooting. You mentioned that, you know, you can't always just go ahead and just go bombs away from the three-point line and just rely on that. Well, the crazy part is the Golden State Warriors are flying in the face of that, because we are at December 7th of 2015, and the Golden State Warriors have still not lost a game. They're on a crazy pace. I think they're at a 25-game winning streak, because what it is that they're 22-0 at this point. However, you have the three games from the NBA Finals that they won.
Oh, you can't count those.
I agree with you there. I think that's cheap. I think people are just trying to pile on the number so that they can catch up to Miami.
Well, that was like Philly's on this losing streak for 2 years. Like, well, but don't forget, half of Philly's team wasn't even there last year.
So what should we do here at the NBA team? Should we just independently nullify those three games and call it a 22-game winning streak?
That's what it is. Mm-hmm. It's a 22-game winning streak. What happened last year? Last year's over. There's only one team that can come into the year with a winning streak, and that would be the champions. So, but that doesn't, by default, everybody came in with a losing streak. You know, you're 0-0. Well, yeah, well, you're coming in off a one-game losing streak, or you lost four in a row. No, it's a new season, new teams, none of those shenanigans.
It is a new season, but why does it feel like the same as the previous season with Golden State?
Well, they're just, everything is still coming up heads for them, and Curry is hitting, you know, what, 50% of his threes, and Iguodala's hitting 50%. Everybody's just hitting something, and... You know, it'll change, obviously. It's gonna, you would assume, you can't keep this pace going for a year.
Well, Steph Curry's getting close. He's at 32 points per game. I saw a handful of 40-point games he already had this week. Once again, one against the, I almost said the Bobcats, the Charlotte Hornets, where he just went off in the third quarter, 28 points in that game. And then he had a great game against the Toronto Raptors, where the Raptors in Toronto really gave him hell. Kyle Lowry had a career-high 41 points. Still not enough. Curry, 44.
Yeah, and then, you know, we had mentioned sort of that Klay Thompson is having a down year.
Yeah, he's bounced back slightly in the Raptors game I saw. And Harrison Barnes is hurt.
Harrison Barnes is hurt, but you have Iguodala, who's just, you know, the sixth man. Okay, he's the fifth man, but
Did you know that Iguodala is second in the league in three-point field goal percentage?
Well,
47%.
The thing is, he's 47. I think Curry's at, like, 46.
Yeah, he's in the top 10, too, exactly.
Yeah, and Klay is at, like, 42 or 43% as well, so...
And then there's Draymond Green, who's not a slouch either, you know?
Draymond Green jacks up about 3 or 4 a game, and he's hitting like I'll say.
He's got the weird big man wind up, but he makes them. You know,
the only one who doesn't shoot threes is like Festus Ezeli, I think,
because all he's doing is dunking and offensive rebounding.
Yeah,
they're so good right now. I don't even know when Andrew Bogut's on the court anymore. I mean, he could miss 3 games in a row. I wouldn't even notice. You know.
Pretty much, it just comes down to Curry. Curry is doing, if you take out Curry's 33 points, this team would be on like a 10-game losing streak right now. If you take out Curry and put in Livingston.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say a 10-game winning streak. I think they would still be a winning team. I think they would still have a winning record.
They'd have a winning record, but they wouldn't be... You
the
know,
best team of all time, yeah.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying. At 22-0, let's just take a glance at the schedule here as I pop it up. Let me see if I can grab it for you really quick, okay? They're still in the middle of their Eastern Conference road trip. On Sunday, they go to Brooklyn to play the Nets. Now, the last time they played the Nets, it was a squeaker. They beat them in overtime, 107-99. Brook Lopez, I think, had like a tip in to put them away in the regulation, right? And it bounced off.
Something like that.
Something like that. And then they go to Indiana to play the Pacers. That's on the 8th. That's going to be Tuesday. And then on Friday, they go to your neck of the woods and they play the Boston Celtics. Are you going to go to that one?
No.
I think you should seriously consider it.
Oh, tickets are insanely high. For the $10 nosebleed seats, those were selling for like 60 already. And
I mean, are they at that 96 Bulls, you know, Heedle? You remember the Heedles when they first got together and the season ticket sales for every team spiked when the Heat visited? Do you think the Warriors are at that position where everybody just wants to see them?
Yeah, there's extreme hype with them, and yeah, it was a high. Plus, it's on a Friday night, so no, we were thinking about going to that game, but just the price wasn't to get a decent seat because they're not going to sit in the last row in the corner.
Yeah, they finished that road trip on the 12th, Saturday the 12th in Milwaukee against the Bucks. Back home for a 5-game stretch, which extends all the way to the 28th of December. Those opponents are the Suns, the Bucks again. The Jazz, who had a really close one with them there, too. That was probably one of their closest games they've had this season. The Cavaliers on Christmas Day, and then the Kings on the 28th.
This is just the way it's looking. It looks like the toughest one will be the Cavaliers.
I think the Pacers, with the way Paul George is playing, who's thank God he bounced back. He's playing out of his mind right now. If there was an MVP runner-up, I'd probably say it's him. You know, I think Curry's the MVP for sure, but Paul George would be the runner-up, but I think that one on Tuesday in Indiana might get him.
Indiana might, but I just don't see them being stopped until...
Because you got that close win in Toronto where you had to travel a lot. You go back to the States the next night and you play the Nets, and even if you play ugly, you probably still win that game. And then 2 days later, you got two more road games you're looking at in Boston and Milwaukee, and you got to play Indiana, who's playing their best basketball right now. So I think that's the it's all timing. You know, you and I were kind of talking about the Miami Heat streak, which was in 2013. It started on February the 3rd and it ended March the 27th in Chicago. When they lost to Chicago, the timing was perfect. Chicago was playing their best basketball without Derrick Rose at that point. They were, you know, it was a defensively minded team, and Miami was a little tired coming off of a road win against Orlando, and they had two more road games after that against New Orleans and San Antonio. It kind of felt like perfect timing for them to lose.
Yeah, and you know, as long as there's not an injury involved, they're gonna lose. They lose one of their important cogs. Their bench isn't deep enough.
Yeah,
to
but
cover.
it is a pretty. They're still the deepest team in the NBA, though.
Team, but if you lose, you know, a Klay Thompson, Barbosa, or you know, you move Iguodala in, you know, you're suffering a lot of points. They're a deep team, but the bench doesn't score a lot.
Yeah, the defensive efficiency is still there. They still rebound the ball like crazy. Their crazy pace, you know, forces teams to kind of hoist up bad threes. That's why their 3-point field goal percentage defense is so good, you know, because they shoot the ball so well and so humbling that the teams kind of force themselves into playing a style that they don't want to, and then they start bricking threes and they turn into easy transition. But Curry's at a point, and I mean, we've talked about it already a few times, but Curry's at a point where he's so good it's almost transcending the game, where it's like, you chase him off of screens, it doesn't matter because he's going to find an opening in the middle to try to get a layup. If you get too far off of him, he'll step back a couple of steps for a three. In transition, he can literally just do that little stutter and go just take a three without a dribble. A lot of those baskets he made against Charlotte in that game, he did it without a dribble.
Yeah.
You know, how do you stop a player like that? You know, the ball movement is so good between all the players, with Iguodala, Barnes, who's on the shelf, Klay Thompson, Draymond. Did I mention Draymond Green already?
We mentioned, but yeah, it comes down to it's Curry, and you know, you see how many people are really.
Do you think they're more Curry centric than they were in the past?
Oh, they're extremely reliant on him now.
Yeah, more so than last year, I would agree.
Oh yeah, if he went down or he took a night off, mm-hmm. and that's basically sort of he's young enough to play every game, but what's going to happen when he has to start taking nights off, or if he has an off night, that team is...
Here's the thing about Michael, because we always talk about the 96 Bulls, you know, with this team, because they're looking at the 72-10 record and how great of a start they were on. I saw quite a few games where Michael did not play well in 96, especially in the finals against the Sonics, and the Bulls won anyway because of their depth, because of their defense, because of how smart their coach was, Phil Jackson, the triangle. They were able to run offense, and their defense was so snug that they were able to win games when Michael Jordan shot maybe like less than 40% from the field. You know, can Curry afford that?
Yeah, those are also different times too. And
yeah, it got to a point though in 98, Michael's last year with Chicago, where he had to be the guy. You know, Rodman was slowing down. Pippen had an injury. And even in 93, right before he had the first retirement, Michael had to play well for the Bulls to win. Scottie was coming on up, and Horace Grant was playing better at that point. But Michael was kind of more... they were relying on him more and more and more to win. Is that a normal thing with all these championships, whether it be the Shaq and Kobe Lakers, you know, LeBron and Miami, where the more... The deeper you go into your run, I guess you could call it your title run year to year, the more reliant you become on your superstar because you rest on their laurels?
Yeah, to an extent.
I mean, it's hard to diversify like San Antonio has, where they can take a superstar like LaMarcus Aldridge and say, hey, are you okay with averaging 15 points and 9 rebounds again? Oh, yeah, that's fine. Like, that's really hard to do. You know, it's
humbling. It used to be hard to do. But, you know, it comes down to the old heat of, well, do you want to play with your friends and win, or do you want to be a superstar and get your team as high as they're going?
Yeah, but that's the funny part with LeBron. He was able to go play with his friends and still average 26 points and 8 rebounds and 7 assists. I mean, he got to a point, you know, after the lockout where he was back to an elite status and still playing with all-star talent. You know, Steph Curry is at that point now where he's learned how to play with a lot of good talent in Golden State and win while doing so, but increasing his individual statistics at the same time. You know, it's a delicate balance, though, like you said, because you don't want to Carmelo it. You don't want to just give him the ball all the time and stutter the offense.
Well, yeah, and, you know, LeBron got his shots because he was the best player on the court, and B, he was making them. You know, Wade's numbers went down. Bosh's numbers went way down. They all knew, okay, we're playing with a top 10 talent here, you know, top 10 all time, probably. We need to defer to him anyways.
It's really interesting because, you know, we're getting very, very close with Golden State trying to match Miami's 27-game winning streak. In hindsight, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, I keep going back to the Heat because of that 2013 streak. How difficult was that? Because they went from past the All-Star break, you know, through that winning streak into maybe the last month of regular season. I think that's one of the most underrated achievements in NBA history.
Well, the All-Star break, I thought, helped them because they all got to rest for a few days.
Amazingly, they were still winning those games while they were resting their players, which I don't know how they... That's when you know you're in a good groove, when you can sit most of your starters. I remember one game where LeBron and Wade sat, and Chris Bosh was the leader of the team, and I think they beat San Antonio during that winning streak. You know, they were on a roll. They were on a roll, for sure. You know, and, I mean, Golden State's on a roll, but can Curry afford to sit a game and win?
I don't think so.
Yeah, like, if Curry sat, I think they'd lose by 10. You know, so I agree with you at that point. So as we wrap up here, you know, as we've caught up with the NBA regular season a little bit, kind of glanced through a couple of topics, let's talk a little bit about some of the schedule coming up. We already talked about, I talked about that Pacers game on Tuesday in Indiana, where it's very likely that Golden State will still be on their 22-0 or undefeated record. Do you think that that's going to be the game to watch on Tuesday?
That might be the game to watch all week. We have a lot of just random mishmashed.
Yeah.
And the funny thing is now the West isn't as good as they were.
If you look at the bottom of the West, there's a lot of teams with losing records that might be hovering in that area where it's like, okay, you got to do something or you need to pack it in. You know, it's getting really tough. And I mean, we could probably get through. We could probably talk a little more about that another day. But it seems like the West is. It doesn't seem like anyone's getting traction outside of, you know, the top maybe four teams, Golden State, San Antonio, the Clippers I still think are in decent shape, and then the Memphis Grizzlies have bounced back really well. Outside of that, I don't really see much there.
And, yeah, a lot of, you know, those games are no longer exciting to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man, we got two Western Conference teams who are both, you know, 20 games
above 500. Hovering around 500, yeah.
Yeah, now it's just, oh, you have two mediocre teams against two mediocre teams.
And if you look at the East, I mean, look at the Orlando Magic at 10-8. I mean, they're bouncing back, you know, and... you got a couple of teams like Charlotte. They haven't really gone away yet. Nick Batum is playing great. Kemba Walker's playing great. I already talked about Indiana. Toronto has looked decent. Washington's weird because they beat Cleveland on the road, had a great win. John Wall had another good game against another team right after that. But they've had a down year to start off, you know, kind of like they had the last two. So they're probably just going to do another repeat of what they did the previous 2 years where they underachieved in the regular season and then they bounce back.
Good wins and then ugly losses. It's, mm-hmm. You know, and then the way the schedule's going this week, it's like Atlanta at Dallas. That's the ESPN game, you know, Wednesday night. It's just like,
mm-hmm.
TNT is giving you Clippers and Bulls. Then
I'm interested in Clippers and Bulls, selfishly. I'll check that out.
Knicks and Kings?
On the 8th, Tuesday, which is the same night as Warriors-Pacers, you've got the Thunder and the Grizzlies. a bit of a contentious rivalry, so that's going to be a little
It's a rivalry, but neither team is just, you know, there's something going on with Oklahoma City. They're not...
Yeah, they lost on the road to Miami, who's, if you look at the standings right now, just based on paper, Miami's the number one seed in the East. And they played very well. Dwayne Wade played great, and it seemed like the Thunder weren't all there. You know, they it seemed like they were kind of sleepwalking a little bit.
And there's a lot of games you can say that about the Thunder. They're not, they haven't bounced back as I think a lot of people thought they would.
Well, just because Russell Westbrook is, you know, a lightning rod doesn't mean they're going to play great all the time. You know, I mean, and Kevin Durant's come back from his injury, typically great, averages like 29 points right out the gate. But you know, he's still, you know. It's still more than just two guys, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, and we talk about the Warriors being really one guy, but the thing is, there's a lot of other guys behind that one guy. You know, who are the other guys behind Durant and Westbrook? You know, they're deeper than they were in the past, for sure, but I think the coach, Billy Donovan, has had some trouble adjusting. I think Fred Hoiberg has had some trouble adjusting, too, in Chicago. And we'll see there. You talked about the Wednesday games with on ESPN, you've got you said the Bulls and the Celtics. That's another Boston game.
Yeah, but that's not, you know, those aren't exciting games to watch, really.
What team can drag you out of your house to go see them?
Well, this week, nothing. If I can't make it to the Golden State game,
okay.
Then...
I hand you $100, and you can go watch any NBA game.
This week, it would probably be the Heat and Pacers on Friday night.
You want to see that one?
That would be a good game to watch.
Yeah, that.
But like
rivalry,
I said, it's just a
the
lot.
The rivalry's not the same.
The rivalry's not the same, but you have two top talents, and then Saturday night's games are, you know, San Antonio and Atlanta would probably be the top.
Well, they played about a week ago, and San Antonio destroyed them.
Yeah,
I mean, the Hawks have been a little bit sketchy too to start. You know, they haven't been great. You know.
But the thing is, just like I said, there's just a lot of unexciting Western teams.
There's the Lakers and the Spurs on Friday for, you know, one of Kobe's last games against the Spurs, who he tortured for years.
Not anymore.
I don't know if they got another game in San Antonio, and even if they do, I don't even know if Kobe's going to play in it. But that's, you know, San Antonio. I'm not saying San Antonio hates Kobe Bryant, but there's been such a linkage between, you know, Kobe's performances and the ones he's had against the Spurs, because throughout his career, he really has tortured them. So I wonder how San Antonio's crowd is going to react to him. So I'm kind of interested. Selfishly, the Pelicans are going to be at home on Friday, and they're going to play against the Wizards. So we'll see there. And then the Bucks and the Raptors, I don't know. That doesn't look too fascinating for me.
No, like I said, there's just not – this week does not seem to be the week – this week, go get your Christmas shopping done.
Do you already have yours done?
Oh, I've been done, yeah.
Oh, you've been done? You had to do it online this time?
Or is it hiding
in the closet somewhere?
It's just sitting in the closet. The kid's afraid of a couple of closets, so I just...
When you were a kid, did you know where your dad stashed the gifts?
He actually kept it at his office.
Oh, in his actual office away from the house.
Yeah, and they would bring him in later.
No, my dad bought a Nintendo 64 in 96, but he put it at the top of the closet. So I'm sitting there, and he covered it with a blanket, and I just accidentally pressed a button, and now I'm playing Frozen on my daughter's Frozen-mobile. Can you hear that?
Yes.
So I guess we're just going to end this one with Elsa singing Let It Go. So it's a good song, huh?
That's your opinion.
On behalf of Adam Murray, this is Andrew Reich. Everybody let it go, and we'll get back to it later.